Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Carolla Classics is brought to you by Tommy John. Look, Father's Day is coming up, and of course it's stressful finding the perfect gift for dad, but thankfully, Tommy John, the revolutionary underwear and clothing brand, knows that comfort is for everyone. Yep, even your dad. Right, Gio?
Indeed. It's not weird. So Tommy John is having a special right now for Father's Day.
So treat your dad to a few pairs of Tommy John underwear in the softest, most comfortable, breathable fabrics he's ever worn. It's the perfect Father's Day gift. And not just for your dad. Get it for your friend's dad. Get it for your neighbor's dad. Get it for anybody.
I'd rather buy it for those guys.
Yeah, exactly. Tommy John has the perfect gift idea for all dads in your life. Deliver comfort to dad's door with 25% off site-wide at TommyJohn.com/classics. That's TommyJohn.com/classics for 25% off site-wide. See site for details. Hello and welcome to Carolla Classics for June 13th, 2020, the show where we highlight the greatest moments of the Adam Carolla Show over 11 years of podcasting, and we're doing it right here, right now. Gio, I am in Nashville, so excuse me for my voice, but I'm have a little NPR going here because I don't want to wake the neighbors, but keep
I think it's funnier if you do wake them and they just imagine what's going on there.
I'm nervous. It's actually making me very anxious. I really hope I don't.
It's hilarious that it's like 1 a.m. where you are.
I know.
Two in the morning, almost.
It's almost.
And this show's due, by the way. I don't think you should sleep. I think you should stay up till all these clips download over those hotel Wi-Fi.
They are going very slowly, but anyway, we'll get the show started. So as I said, clip show, best of the Adam Carolla Show, right here. My name is Chris Loxamana, executive producer of the Adam Carolla Show, and with me, as always, Carolla archivist, super fan Giovanni.
I'm not in a hotel. I'm just talking like this because I want to.
Yeah. I have to keep my voice down. It's the respectful thing to do. But don't worry. The energy is still here. And let's get started with the first clip. And this first clip is brought to you by Geico. Learn more about Geico's 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies at geico.com/giveback. Now, Gio, we got a clip from 2010. What's up?
We do have a clip from 2010. This is Adam Carolla Show 377. It's Dan
really
Milano, creator of Greg the
Gio.
Bunny. Dan Milano, creator of Greg the Bunny, Teresa Strasser, Brian Bishop. It's from August of 2010. It's like a super cut one. It opens with some of T's news, how they used to do this format. It's actually about Adam's first book in 50 years, Will Be Chicks, and its sales numbers and what other books it's outsold. And then it cuts to Dan Milano's interview. Then we get some more of the news with a story from Angelina Jolie about hiring a hitman that Adam and Teresa take in a very hilarious improv direction. Check it out.
From the International News Center, next to Donnie's Mini Bikes, this is the news with Teresa Strasser.
Big news about gay marriage today. Huge. I will get to that in one moment. But first about your book.
Uh-uh.
Yeah. This is historic, what's happened. Yes, the gay marriage decision is historic.
This is your top story.
This is my lead story, Adam, because
yeah, it is.
I've been stunned and shocked and amazed. Mm. So I was talking to my book agent, Anthony Matero,
mm-hmm.
who I adore, mm-hmm. and he was saying, wow, Adam's numbers are really amazing. His publisher must be thrilled. And I said, well, like, what kind of books is he beating? Can you give me examples of some of the books that he's outselling? And he gave me a little bit of a list.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps you've heard of some of these books. You are outselling.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of War and Peace?
Warren? Is the guy named
no.
Warren?
War and, like, pretend it's an ampersand.
Oh, I know those cats. They
Peace.
Sing. They sing. I know their song. Only you know and I know.
Because
I know that I mean
no.
what I say, no. so don't go and ever take it the wrong way. You know I gotta
Adam, no.
But if you do,
no.
it's gonna get you
someday. It's
Tolstoy. Some Who's
consider- Toy? Tolstoy.
Some Who's
con- Tolstoy.
Oh,
Some consider
tall.
War and Peace the
Aqualung.
Best book ever written.
Feeling like a dead duck.
Okay, let's move on. You know who you're outselling?
Spitting out pieces of his broken. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, who sings Lord that Peace. Only You Know and I Know song? That's
Dave Mason.
Dave Mason.
Wow,
yeah.
Nice pull.
Thanks, yeah.
You're outselling a book called Night by Elie Wiesel. He has complaints about the Holocaust, sure.
Mm-hmm.
But you have complaints about other things.
Well, I got my potpourri iced tea that I complain about in the book and many other things.
That's your Holocaust.
Sure, that's my
Holocaust. In your face, Elie Wiesel.
It's a taste bud Holocaust.
My favorite book, To Kill a Mockingbird, you're beating that.
Yeah.
Take that, Harper Lee.
That's right.
Catcher in the Rye, you've heard of that. You're
yeah,
beating
I did.
That. And I bet you're thinking, wow, these are a lot of classics. Why shouldn't Adam's book be beating Lolita?
His book's such? About running over birds and deli sandwiches aren't my bag. And if you think you're impressing me because I'm beating them in sales, well, you're not.
You know why this is even more sad / impressive is because this is back to school time and kids should be buying books for their summer reading.
This is a man who has not read a book.
Well,
the book he has
but
written.
Those books have been out for like 500 years, man.
Okay, I'm ready for you. Mm-hmm. Okay, you've heard of Harry Potter.
Yeah, I have.
Your book is outselling each and every Harry Potter
good
book.
Name for TSV.
It's full of wizardry.
Yeah.
And there's a really old man with a beard in it.
It's got the word Harry and Potter in it. All right. Should we bring out our guest?
Dan Milano.
Yeah. So cocky, Brian. That's why I like getting him.
Damn it.
Yeah, Dan Milano is Warren the Ape, which airs on MTV. Hi, have a seat there, Dan. Good to see you. Mondays at 10:30. Good to see you, my brother.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's well, what do we need to know about the show? Describe it in a nutshell or
it's
banana skin.
It's a parody of follow reality shows that attempts to blur the real life tragedy, which was our sitcom career, mm-hmm. with the fictional life of its star, which is a puppet named Warren the Ape. We had a show on Fox called Greg the Bunny with Seth Green, Sarah Silverman, Eugene Levy, and this cast of puppet stars, and the show was canceled.
Remember it well? 2000 somewhere? 2001?
Yeah, 2001. And so since then, our concept is that the main character, Warren, has been, you know, drinking and whoring and boozing and basically living the life of a train wreck. And then enter Drew Pinsky.
Doctor Drew
is trying to get him on the straight and narrow.
Right,
my legs are too short to reach the ground.
So. What
Doctor Drew in the hizzy?
Plays Drew, and I understand from his work in New York Minute that he's quite an actor.
Yes. Yeah, I think he worked with Eugene Levy in that movie, and must not have left quite an impression. He plays himself very well. I can say that.
What happened to Greg the Bunny? Was it ahead of its time, where it was a network not ready for a puppet?
Well, I'm always going to be biased, but I'll say this. If you have to go into a boardroom and pitch a show as trippy as that, you're sort of already at a loss. And we had done some stuff on the Independent Film Channel and Public Access that sort of tested the characters, and that helped us out mm-hmm. a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly, we really wanted to do a show like we're doing now, like a documentary-type show. We were pointing at shows like Larry Sanders. You know, we wanted to do behind the scenes of a sitcom, but The Office didn't exist yet. Curb Your Enthusiasm didn't exist yet.
Right.
And as you may know, if you can't point to another show that the network can mimic, they have a very hard time conceiving.
Right. It has to be Sex and the City in space.
Right.
Right.
And as a result, our show sort of became more of like a workplace comedy. And you had these great improv actors like Eugene Levy and Sarah Silverman being told to stick to the script and,
right.
you know, just have this very traditional sort of sitcom workplace comedy, which we're proud of, but what we really much more appreciate what we're doing now, because the whole show's done in improvisation, which is really trippy.
Well, like, Curb Your Enthusiasm has an outline, so they always say,
yeah.
for the script.
And we try to do that, too.
And you have an outline, and then you improvise within that outline.
Yeah. So Pinsky will know, for example, okay, so this week, Warren's coming in, he's particularly angry. We'd love you to talk to him about getting him in anger management, because this episode is going to deal with that. Other than that, go for it.
Well,
don't sit down and just start talking.
It's smart because in comedy, the part where you sort of memorize it and try to regurgitate it, sometimes you get up in your head about it, and there's nothing less funny than trying to memorize something
right.
and trying to sort of hit it. It's so much more organic. And what you do is you don't make a rule. You just find people who can do it.
Right.
Maybe when Dr. Pinsky was working with the aforementioned
twins, the Olsen twins, well, maybe they weren't the greatest improvisational comedians, so they had to stay on book, as they say.
I heard Mike Nichols wanted to direct that film, but it just didn't
pan out. He was tied up.
Yeah.
Yeah, couldn't. It didn't work with his schedule.
But if you got Eugene Levy or you have Dr. Drew, and again, Dr. Drew, not a comedic fountain, but it's certainly a guy who's well-versed at speaking off the cuff because that's what he does
and has committed
done for a living.
He's absolutely committed to the reality of the scene. And then obviously we're working with puppets, so myself or another puppeteer is always just outside the frame. And so the person has to be willing to talk to and deal with my arm, basically.
So you actually are the puppeteer.
Yeah, I perform Warren and the character Greg the Bunny as well.
By the way, do you get certified to be a puppeteer? Like, could I call myself a puppeteer? If I put my hand in a sock for a weekend, could I walk
most
around
puppeteers
boasting as a puppeteer?
Are certifiable, but no, there's no, we'll let any butt-reaming asshole be a puppeteer, to quote Breakfast Club. I did not get any professional training. I just was obsessed with the Muppets as a kid, and I used to practice in front of a mirror, and then I actually became self-conscious once I entered society proper. Uh-huh. And put puppets away and obsessed over other things. And then, you know, myself and a couple of buddies, Spencer Chenoy and Sean Baker, we graduated film school. We were frustrated. We got a public access show. Mm-hmm. And we started creating these characters and just riffing with them. And that's sort of how the personalities got formed. And by the time we sold the show to Fox, you know, we were all sort of built in. So.
We worked with a lot of puppeteers doing Crank Yankers, and
sure.
They're definitely a breed apart, those cats.
Like, are they sort of like magicians?
They're like unattractive magicians.
Okay.
Yeah, like ugly. I mean, you know, if magicians, you know, if Copperfield was several hundred pounds and didn't shave his back and had a surly attitude.
That would be a puppeteer?
They
put their hands in more things than they... you know, pull out. They don't pull rabbits out of their hats. They put their fists in rabbits.
Right.
We have a lot of people in common from Crank Anchors. Daddy, our line producer.
I imagine.
Because there's a
handful, if you will.
Yeah. Yes. There's really just a few people that do this stuff.
And do it well.
There's only so many shows that do it. And yeah, so I would imagine a lot of the Crank Anchors folks are now.
I love the Muppets too when I was a kid. Love the Muppets.
What really was great about the Muppets to me was the fact that, especially in the movies and stuff, that they were incorporated into the real world. And you saw Kermit the Frog ride his bike down a real street and talk to real people. And it sort of had this odd feeling of a minority, like that you could possibly go to the bank and maybe one of the tellers would be this little guy made of foam, you know, and were you racist if you waited for the human teller, you know, because those goofy Muppets don't count very well. So you're racist and you're saying, I don't want a puppet teller.
I like it. They can't count. I like
it
like when Miss Piggy would go on The Tonight Show and
like
that. It was just, I don't know, there was something about, I don't know, it's like they were like breaking down the fourth wall. Hey, but listen, I'm the guy who liked Alf, so look out, world. Alf was one of those weird...
Me too. I was six, but I loved
one of those weird sitcoms. I know. It's a weird sitcom where, like you'd go, like... I remember when it was out, like, I don't know, was it late 80s, early 90s? But
no, mid-late 80s.
Mid to late 80s. And... it was always one of those weird little secret sitcoms where, like, if you got drunk and you're talking to someone and they want to know what TV show you liked, you'd go, sometimes I watch Alf. And they'd go, me too. And it was like a weird little secret
closet
that you thought Alf was funny. It was kind of a funny sitcom.
We're trying to get Alf on our show. We would love to cross-pollinate and have
Why
other
not?
Puppets on
well,
our show.
What the fuck is he doing?
His rep's very tight-lipped about it. They're
really?
Probably just waiting to see how our show does first. But we'd love to, for Warren to, you know, meet Alf. Maybe Alf could be his sponsor. Maybe he's somebody who did clean up his act.
I hear he's in Celebrity Rehab this
year. I was
year.
Just thinking.
I used to joke he was
amazing.
In Betty Ford. But, I mean, we'd love to show the way, you know, you'd guest star on a show like Curb Your Enthusiasm and have an actor play themselves. We'd love to have these puppets come on our show.
You love cats.
You know.
Remember his name?
Gordon Shumway.
Gordon Shumway. Wow, well done.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, of course. I mean, I love all that stuff. And we're just trying to do our version of it.
There's a spooky version, like a Kukla, Fran, and Ollie version and a Beanie Boy version, Beanie and Cecil. There's been a couple of weird, creepy... There's been a show, a Kukla, Fran, and Ollie. You got to find a picture of that.
And they used to beat each other severely, those puppets.
For the uninitiated, they were violent. I don't think I've seen, and I'm familiar
Cecil
with Alf.
Cecil and Beanie were weird, too.
What was the story? Alf lived with a family of humans?
He was an alien who landed on Earth, and they found him and took him in. And
he was from planet Milmac.
Hid with them.
Okay, like an E.T.
How old was Alf?
Alf probably was an answer to E.T.
That's
what I'm culturally,
saying.
Right?
Yeah.
There's a
alien life form. That's what Kukla, it stood for.
Kukla, Fran, and Ollie. And there's pictures of Ollie that are even more frightening. A lot of 50s, a lot of scary 50s puppets. Punch and Judy, and like I said, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, look at, got some lazy eyes there.
Look at
well,
Al.
King Friday from...
oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was the scariest puppet of all.
Now, what's
what was King Friday from?
Yeah.
Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Oh, yeah.
And the voice of Fred Rogers. Right. It was very creepy.
What's the difference between, like, a ventriloquist, say, in personality, and a puppeteer?
Personality-wise, I don't know. I think the ventriloquist wants to be on stage and wants to impress you with the fact that his mouth isn't moving, whereas the puppeteer is content not to be seen at all. In fact, wants to be hidden and just have you focus on the puppet. Maybe puppeteers are just not very good ventriloquists because their mouths are moving. But for whatever reason,
that's interesting. You prefer to be behind, literally behind the scenes.
Yeah, ideally, you shouldn't be seeing me, and it should be about the character. Although we don't, for one minute, assume people forget it's a puppet. But hopefully, if we achieve something, you know, maybe for 2 seconds, you believe in something we do the way I once believed in the Muppet movie.
Yeah, Kermit was so real to me and kind of still is.
Yeah, you just accept it. And even when you see Jim Henson holding him, there's still some magic there.
Well, let's not forget Triumph, the insult dog.
Oh,
I love that guy.
And that guy would be integrated into the real world with
Yeah, Robert Smigel just, like, show up unannounced at, you know, at events and do his thing. And people always talk to the puppet. When we used to do stuff in Washington Square Park on a public access show, it would amaze me how many people we'd walk up to, whether it be like, you know, Wall Street guys or crack addicts, and everyone just wants to talk to the puppet.
It is a weird thing as a human being, and I guess it's nice because it's sort of the same part of our brain that lets us enjoy movies. Like, you're watching a movie, you recognize the people in the movie, you know it's a movie.
Right.
But yet you're still in the movie.
Yeah.
And I guess it's the same part of your brain that's able to talk to a piece of plastic with fake fur stuck to it.
Right.
That's insulting you, right?
Yeah, well, we hope it's suspension of disbelief kind of carries you on. But I've had people watch our episodes so far, and these are people that work in the industry and make television for a living, and they say, how'd you get the puppet to drive around the corner and crash his car? Or, you know, did you really hit Seth Green with a car? You know, and it's amazing to me that they believe in it that much, because the answer is, of course not. Of course we didn't. It's fake. But that's awesome. You know, if we shoot the stuff handheld and kind of telephoto, and there's a little improv in the scene, and we sort of cover the seams of the editing really well, for a few seconds, you feel like, maybe this thing is really happening.
I did the new Gong show with Triumph the Insult Dog, and the big thing is his cigar would fall out of his mouth every time he started. He had 200 cigars and he'd keep shoving the cigar into the mouth, and then he'd start talking and it would fall out. I mean, it was one of these things where, of course, if it's being held in by his mouth and then he's going to move his mouth, it's going it's going to fall out.
Puppets and props don't get along.
No, yeah. It's true. But part of his charm is how cheaply built he is.
Which goes to show how little you need also to make a character. I mean, if Robert Smigel's personality is big enough, and it is, then you believe in that character, even though he's just a little rubber thing. And our puppets are very low fidelity as well. You know, we don't think you need a lot of bells and whistles, and we also can't afford it, so that works out nice. But I'll say, when we were at Comic-Con recently, we were doing signings, and I had the puppet, and people would just run up and shove the autograph in the puppet's face. And I'm like, not the best with pens. So I'd stick a pen in the puppet's mouth and have him sign or whatever. We just signed a big crooked X, and I'm like, well, that's literally his signature. Yeah, but it's the fact that no one would even think twice about handing a pen to a piece of cloth. It's amazing. I love it.
Well, those guys are pretty beaked up on Tang, to be fair.
Yes.
It's a lot of those guys at Comic-Con.
Ah, those are my people.
Sticks.
And
dice
also,
rollers of America.
You are reworking the film Short Circuit.
Yes. Yeah, I did a couple drafts of that for Dimension Films.
I feel like that was Brian's favorite movie of 1986.
Johnny Five? He's alive.
No disassemble.
That's right. Didn't Fisher Stevens play a...
Yes, Fisher Stevens played the... no, you cannot watch the late night movie, Johnny Five.
He's the original Apu.
Yeah, it's the original Apu.
Yeah.
It's Fisher Stevens, a lot of range.
Everyone loves...
Gutenberg
he's a
was
character.
In that, right?
Who? Yeah, Steve Gutenberg.
They did two or three of them?
They did two. The second was with Michael McKean. The first had Ali Sheedy. I tried to write cameos for everybody. Uh-huh. I don't know. The relationship between the writer and the finished product is a very tenuous one, so I have no idea what they'll ultimately do. But I was happy with the script, and I tried to write parts for everyone in the original movie. And I named the cat Goots.
It's always good too. At the beginning, when like they are like Ali Sheedy and number five argue over there, and at some point they go, "You overgrown bucket of bolts, get out of here!" There was always some sort of insult that ends with bucket of.
Your mama was a snowblower.
You're right.
Another classics.
So you think that movie's going to get made?
I don't know. Because it's a franchise, I think it has a shot. I know mm-hmm. they're attaching a director right now, but I don't know. It's Dimension Films, and I don't. You know, I ultimately, once the writer turns in his draft and they say thank you very much, the check clears, and then you hope for the best.
T-Bone.
Yeah?
Let's hope for the best in the rest of your news.
And now, the rest of the news with Teresa Strasser.
My cans aren't working. I hear nothing. I can't hear what I'm playing.
I can't
right
hear
now.
Anything either, so it's two of us.
Your still, cans aren't working?
I enjoyed it.
Still smarting over his loss. I can't hear anything either.
Well, I think you and I are on the same headphone jack behind you, you know what I'm saying? Like we're plugged in the same splitter.
Maybe that's we'll what's going on. All right. We'll try to take care of that technical difficulty.
I found it thoroughly enjoyable.
I enjoyed it too.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to loosen my cans up and you can start with the news, T-Bone.
Okay, well, we've been talking about the Angelina Jolie book by Andrew Morton, The Unauthorized Bio.
Mm-hmm.
And there didn't seem to be very many really big revelations.
Most of the stuff I'd learned on watching, like, an E! True Hollywood Story from 7 years ago.
Well, finally, one I hadn't heard before, and it's pretty juicy.
Mm-hmm.
According to Andrew Morton's tell-all, at one point, Angelina Jolie hired a hitman to kill... herself.
Oh, really?
She went through
there we go. Now it's working.
There we go. She went through a bit of depression, suicidal thoughts, mm-hmm. Andrew Morton said on Fox News, Fox and Friends. Mm-hmm. He went on to say, on one occasion, she said she hired a hitman and she was going to pay by installments. For whatever reason, she never went through with it.
I'd be a great hitman for Angelina Jolie, so it'd be like, all right, we're going to need half now and then half after I rape you. sorry. That's a hit.
And then...
Oh, shit. Did I say that out loud? Right. I meant... Sorry. Half now, then half after
it's
I kill you.
It's important to make it look like an accident.
Right.
Right. So if there's an attempted rape...
This rape will definitely look like... I mean, damn it. Sorry. I was just raping. So it's on my mind. Sorry. What were we talking about again? Oh, yeah. Half now, half after the killing. Sorry. That's right. There'll be no raping. Your corpse. That's for damn sure.
But if they were to find
semen. But if they were to find some semen, I do feel like that would, you know.
Throw them off.
It would help them not. No one's going to think you killed yourself with a penis.
They won't jump to the first conclusion, which is she hired a hitman to kill herself, which I think most would.
Yeah. So again, you know what? Why don't you sleep on the rape?
I didn't even present the rape. The rape was totally your idea. I just wanted you to kill me because I'm depressed.
Okay, I thought I heard rape.
At what point did I
just heard you say rape.
I said...
Done and done. Let's get the raping over with. Then we can focus on the killing.
Do you know any other hitmen? Because I don't think this is really a good match.
Well, they're all... But believe me, they're more into rape than I am. They'll bring rape up long before I will.
I'm going to hang myself.
All right. How about a blowjob? How about half a blowjob now? And then half on completion. All right, listen. You know what? Forget I even brought up rape. Just come to my custom van, and I will kill you.
You know what? I'm going to drown myself if it's...
Oh.
You know what?
No, you get all bloated.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I have some pills.
I'll take care of the corpse. You kill yourself, let me handle the corpse.
I don't feel right, because I'm going to OD, and then you're going to come in and have your way.
No. I'll take you out and give you a decent burial. See, where do you keep the condoms?
Seems like she's so fertile, she could get... pregnant post-mortem.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's probably,
you know, you have to be
look
concerned.
Look what we found. Well, so her legacy will live on.
This stuff, I mean, the stuff about hiring a hitman.
Well, it's actually kind of amazing because if you've ever had suicidal thoughts, you know, it naturally there are practical considerations.
Right.
You know.
Suicidal thoughts.
As you do. Every 5 or 6 years when you think, I'd like to shuffle off these mortal coils and get the fuck out of here. You think, well, I don't want to take too many. First of all, how do I get my hands on all those pills? Then what if it goes bad and they just pump my stomach and it's embarrassing?
Well, so I'll be pumping your stomach. I'll be pumping a lot more in your stomach.
You outsource it. You just say, you know what? Someone else could do this.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't really seem to be a good way. Like, hanging yourself just seems like violent. I'm not really, the physics of it are confusing. I know people do it successfully all the time.
You know,
it's an embarrassment if you get it wrong.
Angelina, in order to make this seem a little more viable, you know, the suicide thing. Why don't you go ahead and call one of those suicide prevention hotline. Call that. Get a call in. Hang up. They'll trace you back to your house. And then later on after I kill you, you know, it'll be more, you know, we'll have that on the record.
I don't know how long you've been a hitman, but I feel like you're not listening to me. I don't want people to think I'm killing myself. That's why I'm hiring you, to make it look like someone just murdered me. Okay. So if I call a suicide hotline...
Okay, well, you just keep bringing up rape, so I'm confused now.
May I suggest a sniper? Because they're just voyeurs. They just like to watch. They sort of just masturbate from long distance. They don't need to touch. They don't need tactile.
Hey,
yeah, snipers, wait
a minute. I know this black guy who hides in a trunk with a teenager.
Malvo?
He'll get you from 700 paces.
I think he's... He's doing a bit upstate.
Pretty sure he's dead.
He's upstate?
I think Malvo, the kid's still around.
Oh, kid's around. Yeah. All right. Well, when he gets paroled, I'll see about that.
It's not hard to find a good sniper. You know, somebody who's come back from the war, maybe they need a couple bucks.
Yeah, I'll go.
It's hard to find one. By the time you found one, it's kind of too late.
Anyway, you don't want to jump off a bridge.
When they reveal themselves, it's over.
I'll go on Angie's list.
Try to jump off a bridge, and then a freaking angel shows up and shows you what your life could have been and all that bullshit.
Oh, yeah,
Nobody wants that all the time.
But apparently that's painful. It's like hitting bricks.
You know the sign of a good sniper? No reviews on Angie's list.
Yeah. No reviews.
That's the sign of a good sniper.
What about on Yelp?
Gets it done the first time.
I Yelped you, and it turns out you've raped a lot of people that you said you were going to kill. And you got like 2 stars.
Well, I'm a contract rape. I mean, killing. She didn't really do this. She thought about it or some bullshit like that. Here's what I'm saying. Everyone, whenever somebody writes a tell-all book or somebody writes a tell-all book about somebody else, they always do the flirted with suicide. Who hasn't technically thought, what would it be like to be dead? You know what I mean? Which is a far cry from jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge and survive.
Well, there are apparently levels that therapists look for to see whether or not they should be concerned. Lynch was telling me, because one day I was depressed, and he pulled some technical thing like...
One day?
Oh, nope. You don't have a plan of whatever.
Yeah,
whatever.
You need a plan.
Yeah, I don't have a weapon or something. So he's like, don't worry about it. You're at a 2.
Yeah. Call me when you're
a 1.
Three
I was at
half.
A 1. I was
you're
at a 1. Yeah, I said, call... He did. Call me when you're at a 3.5.
Right.
When you have a plan and a weapon and start giving away your shit.
Right, yeah.
But you're right, who hasn't been at a level 1?
Right, we've all been there.
For the last 30 years.
My 20s
years.
There,
And there now, just thinking about taking a wrench, taking air, get a wrench to myself. Yeah, I like to kill Professor Plum style. I
don't know
wrenches and candlesticks. Yeah, I just think it's more traditional.
And that was Dan Milano back in 2010 hanging out for Tease News. And talking about
Adam. And having Adam forget that he met him previously.
It's okay.
It happens to the best of us.
Now, they did talk about in 50 years we'll all be chicks outselling Harry Potter, which is fantastic. I also want to remind everybody that this Tuesday, Adam's newest book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, is available this Tuesday. You can pre-order it now if you want, but make sure to get it. It's, I think, his best book since 50 years. Like, it just...
It's also outselling J.K. Rowling's, but for entirely different reasons.
Yeah, exactly. But make sure to pre-order that now and get your copy, either the audiobook and or the actual book.
I have both pre-ordered.
Oh, you're going to love it, Gio, especially the acknowledgments. Hint, hint. All right.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right, let's get going with another clip. But first, got to tell everybody about Method Men. Gio, I know you've been hearing me on the Adam Carolla Show talk about how good I smell.
And bragging about it. You told a story of some time where a girl said you smelled bad. I had a whole theory about that I'll share after the ad.
Oh, well.
Or after the spontaneous mention of this great product from Method Men.
Well, Look, Gio, I got this body wash. It's cedar and cypress. Okay, these are two woods. It's not very,
sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's subtle. It's like kind of manly. It's not floral or anything. And I just,
it sounds manly.
It just feels good to smell that way. Like I enjoy the way I smell, so I can't even imagine how much everyone else enjoys it. Like my fiance finally has me smelling very nice. And thank you, Method Men, for that. They also make deodorants, shampoo, conditioners, and it's perfect for men's hygiene. So it makes a great gift, even if you want to get. I would love to get body wash as a gift because I use it. So anyway,
it's not weird.
It's not weird at all. So everybody, please check out Method Men. Okay, that's methodmen.com. And if you visit methodmen.com, you get fresh without the fuss, and you save 15% with the code CLASSIC when you buy online at Method Men. So make sure to check out Method Men and check out all. I like the cedar cypress, but they also have sea and surf. It makes you smell real nice. But anyway, Gio, what's up with you? And what are your thoughts with that girl in high school who told me I smelled? It wasn't by the way.
Okay, if it wasn't you, because I was going to say, sometimes people who have ethnic backgrounds have home cooking that sometimes gets on their clothing, like some, you know, certain foods or scents that are made that other people aren't accustomed to. So there may be unintentionally a little racist, no. And they may be like, oh, you smell weird. And it's like, actually, that's my, let's say, delicacy from my from where I'm from.
Well, here's the thing. The guy next to me, who also sat with us in class, he really smelled, and I always thought that. And I think that she thought that smell was permeating from me. But either way, I was really upset about it, and I've been very hygienic.
You got secondhand butt-scented.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and it's haunted me ever since. All right, well, Gio, it's very late here in Nashville. We just did a great show with Clay Travis, who is Cousin Sal's co-host on Lock It In. And we obviously talked about Cousin Sal in the green room and just everyone's relationship, and it's just a cool thing. Him, Adam, watching football on Sundays. Cousin Sal's telling Clay, "You gotta see football with Adam. It's the best thing ever." Well, back in 2010, Cousin Sal had football Sundays with Adam, and they invited Petros Papadakis.
Yeah, it's 7 weeks in a row, as Cousin Sal proclaimed at the top of this one. This is Adam Carolla Show 433. This is October of 2010. Petros joins them. Cousin Sal takes off. This is Adam and Petros from the top of Petros joining them. He got confused trying to find Happy Ending, and then he mixed up with Happy Endings, and then they talk about the various process of experiencing something like that in a massage parlor, and it goes a little something like this.
Petros, great to see you, buddy.
It's great to see you, Adam. What's cracking?
I love to see you blooming into a full-fledged star.
Really?
Yes.
I had a really rough time just getting here. I mean, I saw the place, and there was a sign that said, "Park it here." Mm-hmm. And I ignored that and went around and parked through the wrong way. Mm-hmm. But I hit the curb real hard, so all the valet guys were looking at me and saying, "Look at that idiot."
Right.
And my wife's sitting in the car, face turned red. And I got into the car, and I just thought I'd do the thing where I kind of just ignored the valet and kind of act hard and just, you know, kind of took the ticket and didn't look at him because I can't drive, and I drive like an idiot. And I took my keys with me.
Why is it that so
they had to chase me into the front?
Why is it so many athletes can't drive? It's so weird.
It's a secondary thing, you know? I mean, it's just, you're just not thinking about it. You know, I remember once
You think about the hand-eye coordination and all the ability and the fast twitch, muscle reflex and everything. And
lack
you were such
of interest.
A great player in high school and college, and yet you can't drive a goddamn Chevy Malibu.
And it's a bad Chevy Malibu. I mean, it's all there's. You could see it outside. There's scrapes on either side from hitting things and bonking.
But
into
I mean,
stuff.
I've done those, you know, pro celebrity, you know, go kart races and stuff like that.
Keanu Reeves and stuff.
Yeah, and the jocks are the worst drivers in the group, and yet they're the greatest athletes.
I took a shot in the groin once, like a cortisone shot, like right here.
Oh, you mean a shot?
Yeah, like a shot when I was playing. And it was at USC, and I lived in Koreatown. And so, you know, that's about 25 minutes in the car, you know, during rush hour down Western and whatnot. And so I took the shot in the groin on a Thursday, so, you know, my leg wouldn't go numb or something horrible, you know, if I took the shot right before the game on Saturday. So I was driving along, and my left leg just was gone. But I didn't know, you know, because I do the gas and the brakes with. Mm-hmm. Is there anybody that does the gas and the brakes with both
No. I mean, there's a couple stunt drivers out there that are like,
but,
you know,
yeah,
drift
so I just,
and stuff. But you're driving an automatic.
Yeah. I don't know how to drive stick.
Yeah.
And
that's my
I don't.
Point.
It, most
athletes
people,
don't know how to drive
yeah,
a stick.
I didn't know. And I pulled up alongside my place in Koreatown. You know, I had all my shit with me, you know, all my books and, you know, my papers and, you know, my
sure.
my playbook and my English books. And I was a student.
Sure.
And, you know, I put my leg out of the car and it was just gone. You know, if they hit a nerve, you know, you just have a big noodly leg.
Right.
It happened to Troy Polamalu before an Orange Bowl once. They hit a nerve on him in a shot. It happened to Bettis once before a Steelers playoff game. It just sucks when it happens. And, you know, I was hopping around outside, you know, one noodly leg flying around. I lived in a building with all gay guys in Koreatown. And they, what's wrong with the football player? You know, it's awful. But that's been my life. You know, I'm not a good, not too clear behind the wheel.
Yeah.
I guess the best way to put it. I made a fool out of myself here, just here at the happy ending.
Koreatown is a place that slows down. Speaking of gay guys, how many gay guys have just been walking down the street, seeing happy endings, and thought, jackpot, baby.
Well, that's
and
what
then
I
walked
thought,
in
too.
And seen a bunch of straight, fat Mexican guys in Raiders jerseys and went, what the fuck? This is the worst gay bar I've ever been in. It's like my grandfather, I've told this story before, but it's so sad. My grandfather's from Hungary. I know your family's all from Greece.
Yeah.
And he was an old school guy, and the poor guy gets stuck in North Hollywood with the fucking Corollas. So he's miserable. He's my step-grandfather. He's a Jew from Hungary. And at some place, sometime like 1974, he sees a sign go up and a building go up on Laurel Canyon that says Der Wiener Schnitzel. And he thinks, thank Christ, finally I get some good schnitzel in this town. And for then he shows up. Of course, there's a fucking hot corn dog there, and he doesn't know what the fuck to make of it. But he got sucked into the Der Wiener Schnitzel, just like the gays would get sucked into the happy ending.
I had a friend, and back in the day they used to call it
Mr. Fister, still my number one gay bar name, by the way.
They used to call it the Asian whack house, right?
Sure.
Because that's where you'd go, you know, there might be a lot of nice Asian ladies there.
For the happy ending?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I had a friend that was one in Redondo Beach. And, you know, this guy was like a rich kid. I think he was like the son of a tuna conglomerate or something.
Oh, that old story.
And they raided it. You know, when he was there, you could just imagine what that's
raided
like.
The,
you know, screaming Asian girls, half-dressed.
Sure.
White dudes under the table, you know, looking at all the feet going
well,
by.
How are they, how can they bust a boner? Like, you could claim you had a boner when you were getting a regular massage,
yeah,
right?
Suppose, yeah.
I mean, as long as there was not a hand upon your Johnson, there's nothing you could, how they do that, you know what I mean?
That's a good. I think they probably have to catch you in the act. You know, they'd have to blow right into the room at the moment.
Right.
You know,
that'd be a good undercover gig. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of undercover gigs, there's that one where you become a Johnny Brasso or whatever, Brasco or something.
Donnie Brasco.
Donnie Brasco.
There's an NBA ref that was like that guy. Bob Delaney, he was like an undercover FBI guy for years, and now he's an NBA ref.
And, I mean, there's undercover gigs where, you know, you have to infiltrate the Gambini crime family, and you have
right.
to kill a dude so they know you're cool, and then they beat the shit out of you as part of the initiation, and the next thing you know, you're dealing with, you know, big kilos of heroin and guys pulling guns out and stuff. And then there's the other one where you just go into the rub and tug, and the second you come, you arrest the chick. You know? I mean, like, that would be more my gig. Like, if I was a test rat, I wouldn't want to test, like, the sleep deprivation or something like that. I'd want to test the cocaine. You know what I mean? Like, They're good gigs and bad gigs for undercover guys and
I
rats,
wouldn't be very
you know?
Comfortable. You know, I didn't like being touched anyway. You know, when I was an athlete, you have to get all kinds of massages. And then, like, you go to a place and you don't really know what the deal is or how they're going to approach you or what they're going to say or, you know, how it happens or they roll you over.
I don't know that the hand could do it for me anymore.
Really?
I feel like my hand at some point would intervene and go, step out of the way, son.
See, I don't...
Let me show you how a pro does it. I don't know that my left hand could sit idle while Strange Hand was on my cock. At some point, it would intervene. It'd be like, you know, if it was a Michelin-rated Master Chef watching some guy trying to flip flapjacks and have him land on the floor. And at some point, you just go, get out of the way. Let me take over. Out of the way.
Wouldn't you think about the background of the poor girl from Laos, you know, standing over you just trying to make it quick? Wouldn't you kind of feel bad for her?
Well, I would. And then, and also, at some point, they would start talking, but it being some weird broken English, and they would go, come on, big boy. And they'd be like, ah, don't talk. Just put on a little Huey Lewis and let me just focus here.
And that was Petros Papadakis hanging out for Football Sunday at Happy Endings, appropriately named.
Or inappropriately, depending on who asked. Petros got lost.
Sure. All right, before we get going with the next clip, I want to remind everybody that, look, though we're apart these days, we're sharing more, and Geico would just like to say thanks as well. They say thanks for sharing all your videos, all your posts, your pictures, and just keeping everybody connected. It's really nice, and now it's Geico's turn to share in their own way. And that's with the Geico Give Back. It's a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Gio knows what's up.
It's legit.
That's right. So legit. And because Geico's committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for info and eligibility. All right, Gio. I'm excited. We got another clip going, and this one features Alan Hughes. Now, who is Alan Hughes?
Part of the Hughes Brothers directing team, From Hell, one of their weirdest movies with Johnny Depp. And then, of course, Dead Presidents, a million other movies in between. Basically, if you liked one of their things from the 90s, you'll love his interview. But this is just Alan, and he had done the Defiant Ones, yes, the HBO docuseries. About Dr. Dre and Interscope Records. So you get a little bit of an Interscope history lesson that they originally had a racing team before they were even involved in the music. And it's just a whole portion of Alan's interview. We've played part of it before on the Sunday show, but we've never played it on the Saturday show, and we've never played just this portion. This is Adam Carolla Show 2211, Alan Hughes, Gina Grad, Brian Bishop, December of 2017.
Alan Hughes in studio. Documentary series, The Defiant Ones, I enjoyed very much with my wife. We don't watch too much together, but The Defiant Ones we definitely did, and I loved it. It's available right now on Blu-ray and digital platforms as well. You don't have to be a fan of music or really a fan of even documentaries. Just be a fan of life and progress and how people can go from this place to that place very quickly. So check that out. Alan, great to see you.
Thank you for having me.
Tilt your mic up a little.
Oh, there you go. Perfect.
Thank you.
I should know that.
Also, American Pimp is one of yours as well, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I know the great Bishop Don Magic Wand.
What's really? The green for? What's the gold for?
Green for the money, gold for the honey.
That's right.
Yeah. Spent some time in his palatial apartment outside of Culver City. One of the only guys I know who owns a Rolls Royce and parks it in front of a pretty crappy apartment in Culver City.
That's
awesome. Most of the time, if you have a Rolls Royce, you're a homeowner.
Or at least you don't own a home.
This is very true.
You spent some time in that apartment?
No, thank God. I made him famous. So that's the famous man. Right,
so you're you enabled him to be able to get that cleaning deposit down to move into that apartment and outside
you're a star
of Culver
maker.
City.
And then the whole Snoop thing. I'm like, oh my God, because Snoop didn't took him and blew him up. I'm like, what am I responsible for?
I was with Snoop in that apartment. With the Bishop Don
I'm
Magic
so sorry.
Mark.
I'm so sorry.
Snoop, basically, that's where he announced to me he just got the bad news that Cadillac was not going to do the Snoop DeVille.
Oh, that is devastating.
Well, you don't want to be around Snoop that day. Not when that news goes down.
Seriously.
He smoked indica instead that day.
And he was like, F those guys. I'm going to GM. Oh. And I didn't want to tell him that GM owned Cadillac. You know, like, screw Lexus. I'm going to Toyota. Okay. Snoop, all right, moving on.
You'll be just fine.
I said nothing.
I had no idea that happened because I remember he had the design, the whole thing, you know?
Yeah, they were going to do it, and then they pulled –
pulled the rug out from under.
I wonder why.
Yeah.
I wonder why.
So the documentary series, the Defiant Ones, incredibly so. So I make some documentaries sometimes, and I was watching yours, and I was going, man, it's so well shot. I feel like the genre's come such a long way because there's so much more artistic flavor being put on these things. Before, mm-hmm. it was a pretty standard thing. Like, get the footage, sit right. the person down, interview the person, weave in some footage, put a little B-roll in. Now it's just whatever. You're telling the story, but you can tell it any way you want now.
Yeah, it's so interesting because when you think about that medium, it's been around as long as film has been around. You know, the documentary medium, you know, there's industrial films they used to do. And,
right, all the
you
school
know,
films
PSA
and
films. And right. you go, why does medium take so long to start to really flourish as far as artistically? And you look at things like Making of a Murderer. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, The Jinx, you know, right. which was going, you know, going yeah. into the Errol Morris Thin Blue Line terrain, you know, where you bring in cinema now into these documentaries. And it's just, that was my thing. Like, how do I bring what I know to make this more exciting and not just a talking head thing, you know?
Well, I just got done watching the Muscle Shoals doc.
That's a good one.
And they're like long sweeping shots of yeah. cotton fields and
swamps.
Vistas and swamps while someone was talking, you know, while Mick Jagger was talking, and they're like, what does this big open field shot have to do with the Rolling Stones? And they're like, I don't know. It works. It's good. It's art. It's a new world order. I was mm-hmm. showing the clip that I loved about Trent Reznor and Jimmy signing Trent mm-hmm. feeling burnt, and then the footage, and we're in his hotel room, and the candles are all lit, and it looks amazing. And then we see Trent speaking from back in the day.
The archival. Yeah.
The archival.
Yeah.
But somehow the archival seems to match up with the new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he's moving his finger like 1-2 and stuff. And I thought, and I remember watching it, and my wife, who's her theme is, well, why can't your docs be this good? That's kind of a theme of hers. And I go, because I'm not that talented, and I do other things. But she said, look what they're doing. And it's like they're talking. It's like Trent Reznor's talking. And I said, is he talking? And we started to like rewind it. And I still can't tell.
Yeah.
What is that technique? Find the archival and just find the perfect sentence?
I have this, I don't like to use this word because it's overused. I have this genius editor from Finland. His name is Lasse Järve.
Perfect.
And he's a mad scientist. He just sits there and just obsesses. So I'll come up with an idea, but he just takes it there. Because what that technique, what you're talking about, is normally in a documentary, you're happy just to get the shots that we did,
yeah.
like the
just
recreation.
The footage. Yeah.
Right.
Just the recreation part with the candles, let right. alone then you cut to the actual archival of him in a hotel room. It's kind of like you're doing – you usually commit to one or the other. So he found a way to – he's really gifted at massaging and moving and sliding to where it looks like the guy's actually saying what he's saying.
Right. Yeah.
Perfect.
But there was – yes,
you know,
Brian.
The thought I had too was like people throughout their lives have speech patterns. You know, talk yeah. a certain way. And imagine Trent Reznor talking one way to you, Alan Hughes, mm-hmm. in 2017 or whatever it was, 2016, is similar how he would have talked in that hotel room in 1988. So
100%.
The chances – there's a chance you're going to find
his
him
cadence,
making the same
yeah.
gesticulations and cadence
yeah.
or whatever.
No, you're right, 100%.
It's a needle in a haystack.
When you have that time, though, you know what this medium, unlike feature films, when you have the time, we had 3.5 years, you can massage those techniques and find those things. And we were reaching for things like that. We're reaching for things to cause that kind of reaction. Like, what? You know, like, it keeps you in.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
It keeps you in.
No, it's very interesting when you can go, how did they do that? Or what did they do? Or mm-hmm. was that a digital thing they just did? Or was that completely done just... through.
Number one,
yes.
The number one thing going in, I said, we're doing all analog approach. If this couldn't have been done 50 years ago, we're not doing it. So that was the baseline of any technique. No digital, nothing.
Also,
no trickery.
Interscope is a guy who's a big car racing fan. Interscope always had Porsches racing. For some reason, maybe I don't know why, their number was either 0 or 00. And I hearkened back to August when I was making my pilgrimage up to Laguna Seca to do the Rolex Historics, now driving a 935. And the guy who qualified on the pole was a guy named Gunnar Jeanette. So you know he's fast. He's a professional
That's a good
driver.
Name.
shared the trailer with him, and he was driving the Interscope 935 in my race. And I thought I'd just show you 10 seconds.
This is recently?
This is 4 months ago. That's him on the pole. That's me behind him.
What's that sound? Wow.
Turbo. And that's the Interscope 935.
Which color was it?
It's black. The first car on the pole inside. The pole is always inside and the direction of the first corner.
Mm.
So if the first corner is to the right, then the pole position is first row to the right. Mm. And if it's to the left, in which case this is, then it's the pole position is number one. And it's a rolling start. So we're waiting for that guy to see the green flag and make the move.
That's a sweet-looking car.
That's the Interscope 935. Then there's me and the boring old 935. And then there it goes.
Ted Fields is still active, huh?
It's his car, I guess. He's not driving it. But every time I go to the races, I see Interscope racing cars.
People don't know this. Before Interscope Records and Interscope Films, which Ted Field handled the film part, there was Interscope Racing. That was the first Interscope brand was racing. Yeah,
actually, it's weird because you see, you know what? As a matter of fact, Gary, if you go to Bruce Canepa's website, you will see one of those 935s or 934 and a halfs or whatever for sale, and you can get a better look at it. But Interscope was a big racing thing. And so when I was watching the doc, kept, you know, Interscope Records, Interscope this, we signed that, and I kept thinking to myself, Interscope? Is that the same guys I see at the track, or is this the same entity? And then I went, I wonder if it is. I mean, it's a unique name, but it wouldn't be, you know, Interscope could be a German company or something. And you'll see the car when you find it, Gary. And I did some research. Turned out the same entity. I burst into the bedroom. I said to my wife, guess what? You know those 935s, right? Interscope, Jimmy Iommi, same company. She went,
oh, my God, it's exciting.
Yeah, she went, huh. And then we got back to watching the doc.
Can you move away from the TV? Yeah.
There's a Interscope.
That's
934 and a half IMSA car.
What year is that, you think?
77.
Wow.
That's hot.
Yeah, nice. There it is. Beautiful. And again, so they did a lot of racing. That's not the same car that was at the track. That's another Interscope racing car. So I guess those guys were pretty heavily into it. So the guy who starts Interscope is racing and then gets into
Ted
media, right?
Ted Fields is like the renegade heir to the Marshall Fields money, you know?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Story, the plot thickens.
There you go.
Is he still around?
He's mysterious about Ted. You know, Ted always had women, too, you know, and...
Yeah,
you know,
now's not a good time to resurface.
I'll stop there.
Oh man, wait till Ken Burns gets it, and all the ladies start coming out of the woodwork. You know that Ken Hans Burns
10-part 2-week documentary
on
Mount Rushmore.
My life is a lech.
Oh shit.
I gotta believe Ken Burns. He's gonna be the only one left, right?
The last man standing.
Yeah.
It'll be him and the little Asian girl from Modern Family.
Those will be
the last two that aren't being accused of something. So, Alan, you must be working on now. These docs are 3 years in the making, or then some. You must start things while others, you know, you got these muffins in the oven, but you're mixing more cake mix over here, right? You can't wait 3 years for this stuff to come out of the oven, right?
Unlike most of these perverts, I'm a one woman man. I can only commit to one
project.
I can't do all. Now I'm, you know, trying to do that, but I can't do it. I can only focus on one thing at a time.
So. What is the next one we can look forward to?
What's the next
talk about?
I don't have the right. We're negotiating the rights right now, but it's my favorite artist of all time. His biopic.
Ooh, Prince.
Interesting. Sonny Bono.
It's interesting. Interesting.
That'd be interesting angle.
That's a great documentary.
Well, great you documentary. Say artist, everyone thinks music, but what about that guy with the afro?
Oh, Happy Trees guy.
Yeah, that's my favorite artist of all time. That guy. He was such a gentle but misunderstood soul. So we don't know now these days, the business of it, you have an idea, you go, I want to do a documentary about this person. and then you go pitch it to HBO or somebody, Showtime or Netflix or whomever.
I'm very brand oriented. Like if I have an idea, I go, that would be great on HBO or that would be great on ESPN. That, so I go, I don't go out and do what everyone else does and go pitch it. So I went right to HBO when it was just a Dr. Dre documentary.
The Defiant Ones, right.
Yeah, it wasn't, Jimmy wasn't involved.
The Defiant One.
Right.
So I called HBO and I pitched him, the president, and he immediately greenlit it. And I was like, wow, I never gotten a green light in my life. And he said, we have one problem though. Jimmy Iovine just walked out of here with an Interscope documentary. I said, I'll call you right back. Because then the light bulb just went off.
I'm right.
Like, that's way better. Let me just merge them. And that would have been boring, just a documentary about Interscope anyway. You know, make it more personal with Jimmy and Dre. And at that point, this was 2012. Beats was just taking over the world, Olympics, FIFA, right. NFL. Yep. So it was perfect.
Is this a new world order, this multi-part thing? Because I'm running into it with this K-Rock doc I'm starting to work on, which is at first it was going to be 90 minutes, and then it's how could we squeeze K-Rock down into 90 minutes. It takes place over 50 years or 40 years, and it touched so many bands and people and celebrities and everything. So now, multi-part, is that?
Yes.
That seems like the way to go?
I'll tell you what was interesting is that, for me, well, people always say this about the Defiant Ones. A lot of people complain that it was too short. I said, too short? You know, like, it could have been 10 parts. Yeah, it could have been 10 parts. But I also knew Jimmy and Dre, they got ADD up, like just off the charts, and they were just to get them past one part was damn near impossible. But I told the guys, I said, the four parts is the new pop. Because Making a Murderer was 10 parts, The Jinx was 6 parts. I go, four is the new pop,
right? Right,
and it truly
it's not
is.
Stairway to Heaven, it's 2 minutes and 41 seconds. Exactly, with a song that's finger popping.
You got it, and people that's how they processed it when it came out. It left them wanting more, and you're talking about 4.5 hours.
Right.
So K-Rock, come on, you know.
Yeah, I agree. And there used to be rules. And just like we talked about making documentaries, there were rules. This is how you do it. There used to be rules with radio. There used to be rules with docs. There used to be rules with everything. And now there's just no more rules. It's just create good product.
Very true.
People will absorb. They'll consume your good product. I there used to be, look, either do a X amount of series, you know, what was Roots, 6 parts or something like that, or you do a 90-minute version. Yeah. You don't do
Those
4.
Are your choices,
You don't do 4 that are an hour and 5 minutes each. Mm-hmm. Like, we got rules here.
But, and that's the other thing that with the Defiant Ones, what I did was each part is its own time because it has its own DNA.
Right.
So part 1 is 56 minutes, if I'm not mistaken. Part 2 is an hour and 10 minutes. Part 3 erupts into a feature. It's 93 minutes, and then back down to 55 minutes for part 4.
It's perfect. It's like whenever I watch Curb Your Enthusiasm, it's like, well, this episode is 37 minutes, and then this one's 41 minutes, and this one's 29 minutes. And it's
Sweet
like,
freedom.
It's as long as he wants to do an episode. Wouldn't it be stupid to go, look, can't go a second past 30, can't go a second under 30?
Well,
we're not making a better product, are we?
HBO invented that. Even when you watch, Last Week with John Oliver, some of those are 44 minutes. Some of them are 28 minutes.
Well, imagine if I said, you two go to lunch. 52 minutes. That's it. We're taking the soup away after that. Well, maybe we'll get bored of each other after about a half an hour, and we'll go our separate ways. Or this thing could go 2 hours. Why are we filling? Or why are we being told to leave when we're having an engaging conversation?
It's not natural.
It's not natural. It doesn't exist in any other form. Why do it this way?
Lunch is a good example.
Yeah, it's a perfect example because we've all had the 25-minute, 30-minute, all right, got to get back to the office, got to check in the phone thing. And we had the one that's going on 3 hours because you just
my
were
favorite.
So engaged.
Yeah, my favorite.
Oh, it's great. The great is you, I've done this before. When you're doing lunch with somebody that you're thinking about hiring, they can't leave first.
Oh, no.
So you get to sit there as long as you want. Someone else is paying for it. And they can never do that. All right, well, they can't flag anyone down or ask for a box for the sandwich or anything. They just have to sit there and listen to you pontificate. They can never leave, right? You're hiring an editor or producer or
they
director.
Can never leave.
Yeah, well, you don't have to hire a director. Well, do you have to hire a director?
Now, yeah.
Now, because you got a farm.
Jimmy taught me well when he says, I know what I'll do. I'll find great producers, and I'll produce them.
Mm. Said, oh, wow.
I got to do that.
Well, yeah. You can never, I mean, at a certain point, you like, I'm into the car world.
Mm.
And I don't know if I was clear about that before with all the 934 no. and a half and 930. No, I'm into the car world. And all the guys who do all the incredible cars that they take to SEMA, you know, Tim Allen gives them $300,000 or $350,000, and he says, I want a Corvette or Camaro that nobody else has ever seen. Start with a 69 Camaro and make it into a piece of art, piece of art. And those guys do it, and they do well for themselves, but they can never really start really making money until they come out with their own line of parts.
Mm-hmm.
Because if everything's just a one-off and you're there,
right.
No matter what you're getting, you'll never really get to that next level. Now, if you have your own line of intake manifolds and they can sell them in China while you're asleep, mm-hmm. then you can get rich.
Right.
Other than that, you're just a well-compensated artist, but you don't get to the next
the big money.
Level. And you've got to do that.
It is a business.
It is a business. Yeah. And so you have to do that just like Jimmy, right?
Yeah. I mean, Dre, I've learned through Dr. Dre, he was such an artist, but eventually you've seen the Defiant Ones is kind of like the Michael Corleone thing in a way. We did that too. Like Jimmy's the Godfather, yeah. You know, Dre's the Jimmy's the cat, Dre's the dog. But Dre had to eventually learn business. And we opened part four with the record business, and his records weren't selling so well. Enter Eminem, you know, and you have to learn to become a business person, or you're not going to survive.
How much easier is it for you to get the next one made, especially if it's a music themed now mm-hmm. that you have this one under your belt?
Everything is because I, you know, when I went into this film, I knew I was going for broke. I go, if this doesn't work, I'm going to go make wine or something. I'm just mm-hmm. getting out of the film. That's the way I thought, you know, and it worked out. It really, really worked out. So now everything's a lot simpler to accomplish. And I got a couple things at HBO and a bunch of stuff happening everywhere else. And, you know, just it's simpler now because people see the clear vision. They know what it is, you know. It's not – It's not, you know, my whole career, my brother was a little like, what is it that these guys are doing? They're doing From Hell and Book mm-hmm. of Eli, and there's Dead Presidents and American Pimp. There's no rhyme or reason to it, and people were confused, you know.
Well, it's easier, as I always say, and I had this realization, you know, in the late 80s when I was working construction, and it was just me and this guy named Tom Johnson. And we'd be building a booth for a tech show one week, and then the next week we'd be at somebody's house in Simi Valley putting on a rumpus room or something. And then next thing you know, we'd be building some cabinets for some guy. And I realized you never really get rich because you bounce around doing so many different things, and you do get paid mm-hmm. if you just kind of get good and focus on. It's not that fun. It's a little boring. It's not that rewarding. But if you just did this one thing, you could get rich doing this one thing. Mm-hmm. And if you try to do this sort of renaissance, man, I'm all over the road. It's hard to get the paydays because you do get the payday from doing the same.
You're known for the things.
Right.
Specialize in something, yeah.
Yeah, you're in and out burger. You don't have.
Wow, that's don't do chicken.
Best. You don't do chicken. You just do this thing. Yes, Gina.
The menu hasn't changed.
I have a question about the opening of the Defiant Ones, mm-hmm. which was so gripping and so interesting. And I don't want to give too much of a spoiler, but I'm wondering how you chose to open with this really sort of humiliating mistake mm-hmm. by Dr. Dre. And why? Why did you choose that?
That's interesting. The first thing that was cut, we had gone a year in production and we hadn't cut anything. And then my partner, Doug Prey, who's a brilliant editor, writer, he went in on Lazy Sunday. I told him what I wanted with that thing because it happened after we were shooting. We were already shooting and then this debacle thing happens with
putting that Facebook video.
Putting the video up
Tyrese
about beats. Tyrese
crip walking and you know, the whole thing just explodes. So Doug Prey, my partner, goes in on Lazy Sunday and cuts this thing together, and I see it. It's pretty much what's in the film.
So that Beats was being purchased by
Apple,
and
but it was a secret.
It was a secret.
And it got leaked out on a Thursday morning, I think, like 11 a.m. It got leaked out.
And Apple does not take kindly to that.
No. And, you're just supposed to go like this.
Right.
Cut to Dre later that night.
Popping bottles and...
And right. going the first billionaire from the West Coast and crip walking. Right, right. So what it happened was we cut that piece and it was so punk rock. It was so self-effacing. And I think it was a good way to send the signal. At that time, we thought it was going to come at the end of the film. And then somewhere in the process, I went, let's open the film with this because it does two things. One, it tells you it makes a promise to the audience. We're not making a fluff piece. Mm. And then it asks the question, who are these guys? Because people didn't know who Jimmy Iovine was before this film.
Right.
In the public, you know. Who are these guys? And then we get started.
So good. Yeah. It's a ripping way to start.
I feel like you take Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine, just take those two guys and you go, look, here's what you can do if you want to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Here's where they started. Here's where they're at. Here's how they've changed. Here's who they are now. Here's who they were 15 years ago. Here's where they're in the middle and the beginning. Here's where they were born. Here's where their parents were. Now, no excuses. Don't tell me you can't go do something.
Right.
That's what I see when I see those two guys. And that's what I love about documentaries in general.
Mm-hmm.
It's you just don't get sometimes in theatrical stuff, which is you're never sure. It's like, is that guy Thor? Is he really from Planet Asgard? Or is that just an
Ragnarok.
Actor from Australia? I don't know. I do know this. Omaha Steaks, man. Holidays coming up fast. How about the perfect gift? Avoid the mall lines and the crowds. I got Omaha Steaks before. I love these guys. We actually, it's a nice gift. We had a family take care of our daughter for a couple days while son was in the hospital and the wife was out of town and everything else. And sent him over an Omaha Steak gift box. And they sent a note like 3 days later, like, you saved our lives. We didn't have anything to eat. We didn't want to go out. We had Omaha Steaks, blah, blah, blah. So it's a nice gift. And it's a nice gift to get yourself, too. They got the gift pack, $49.99. Just $49.99. That's it. And it includes two filet mignons, a top sirloin, boneless chicken breast, the boneless pork chops, four burgers, very good, kielbasa sausages, and you get the caramel apple tarts and the au gratin potatoes and some more kielbasa, and it's all good. OmahaSteaks.com, OmahaSteaks.com. Type in Adam and hit the search bar for 75% savings, man. Why not do that? Let's see. Oh, speaking of food, deviled
kielbasa,
eggs.
Kielbasa, though.
Kielbasa.
Private Parts ruined that for me.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good doc, Private Parts.
I tuned in during that scene not too long ago. I want to thank your publicist and the boyfriend of your publicist for bringing deviled eggs.
Oh, my
real
God.
Real old-fashioned deviled eggs
shout
in
out
here.
Shout out Spencer. Shout out.
Spencer.
Yeah. Low-falutin.
Yeah,
regular
perfect amount of falutin.
That's right. Just regular old school falutin free. I don't like everything with the high falutin stuff. I don't like everybody
not
taking everything and bedazzling it. I like deviled eggs to taste like deviled eggs.
The way
like
God intended.
Like your auntie made them. You know?
That's right. That's what I want. I just want, and when you crave deviled eggs, you in order to crave something, you had to have experienced it first. I think, except for feeling a booby when I was in junior
right.
high,
some
which
case
I did crave that. I did have no experience with
it.
That. Yeah. But to crave something, whether it's huevos rancheros or deviled eggs, you must have had them and enjoyed them in the past.
Chasing that
and
dragon.
So then when you order that, you want a representation yes. of that, not this person's interpretation.
I like
of
your
that.
Two examples are both
Amen.
Eggs.
Eggs are all egg based,
man.
Yes. And sometimes Amen. You might want basted eggs.
Poached egg, whatever it is.
And that was Alan Hughes back in 2017 talking about Interscope. Very interesting interview. I like that guy.
Yeah. I wish he'd actually come back. It'd be interesting. Wonder what he's working on now.
Yeah, I agree. All right, before we get going with the next clip, Gio, you know what's not weird?
Buying underwear for your dad or other people's dads.
Yeah, that's right. So why don't you do it? Buy Tommy John for your dad and all the dads in your life. I get you a discount. You just go to TommyJohn.com/classics, and I'll tell you what that does in just a moment. You can treat dad to a few pairs of Tommy John underwear. It's the softest, most breathable fabric he will ever wear. And remember to get your order in before June 17th to ensure that your gift arrives before Father's Day. Perfect gift. Done. We did it for you. And this is what this is the code Gio was talking about. TommyJohn.com/classics. All right? It'll deliver comfort to your dad's door with 25% off site-wide. Tommy John is the perfect gift. Just go to TommyJohn.com/classics. That's TommyJohn.com/classics for 25% off site-wide. See site for details.
It's not weird.
Not weird at all. It's actually very appropriate. So make sure to get Tommy John. And I swear, I'm wearing them right now. I wear them every day.
I'm wearing them right now.
Yeah. It's just, it's the perfect garment to
put on. If you're not wearing Tommy John, you're wasting your life on Earth.
There you go. I agree, and it's easy as that. All right, this next clip that we have for everybody, this is from 2013, and we're in Nashville right now with Mike August, and I personally love all of Adam's Mike August stories because he is a very interesting guy, and their interactions, they're vaudevillian almost. So
yeah, and the way Adam appreciates August, if people don't like August or hear the stories, have some opinion about him, it almost makes you appreciate Mike August. Like if there's a food you don't like, but there's somebody who's a huge fan of it, and they start talking it up, Adam mocking the various eccentricities of Mike August only make the experience of Mike August that much richer.
Yeah, so we got another Mike August story, right?
We do. Adam Carolla Show, 11:31. This episode had LL Cool J, Dave Damaschek, David Wilde, Allison Rose, and Brian Bishop. This is the portion without David Wilde and LL Cool J who'd called in for the phoner. Pretty solid, but it's just a phoner. This portion is just Adam talking about flying Air France, kicking his desserts back to Mike August and Coach. And then they work their way into Mike August and his famous sneezing. Check it out.
The problem with the rock and roll, whether you're just taking the, you know, Air France flight with me in August, by the way, had my dessert sent back from first class to Mike August. I did not eat my creme brulee or whatever they gave me on the plane, but I'm certainly sure as fuck not going to throw it away.
Trickle down dessert.
Yep, literally classy. Said about five rows behind, somewhere on the right, maybe six, Husky Katie Lang. Go find him.
Sockless.
That was all the marching orders that the stewardess had. Like I literally, it was a big tart. I think I had like a big square tart, and I said, "Well, I'm getting fat, so I don't want to eat this, but I certainly don't want you just to dump it. I don't like the fact that it just all goes into the garbage." So I literally said, "It wasn't a wide body plane, but still," I said, "you know, some rows back." Right side, Husky Katie Lang. That's all she got. And I never saw what happened to the square. And later on, when we got off the plane, I was like, did you get that dessert? Oh, yeah.
Do you think it's the first time a man has sent another man a tart?
Not Air France.
Well, the key to making that happen is that whether or not it was delivered to him, Mike August, given his track record, was going to eat that loose creme brulee. It was walking through that down the aisle.
He would have tackled her and got it at some point. He would have dived down like a seagull.
I don't want to take you off of this story, but it occurs to me that you told us you saw Mike August yawn, but then you never gave us any details.
We're on the road. We're on our number. Now, I don't need Katie. I'm looking for an older Katie Lang. Let's see. Cause he told me, we were on the road. We're hour 19 into our day. And he had a crazy 4 days as I did in New York. So, just on the road driving for the last 5 hours and up since 6 a.m. and blah, blah, blah. That's when the yawn occurred.
So it wasn't weird like his sneezes are though.
No, sneezes are events and they're violent. And they scare the shit out of anyone around him. Yeah. And
he doesn't know when they're happening, so he can't warn you.
I said, so perfect. I said, Mike, you got to give people a heads up when you do that violent sneeze. Because he does a thing where he's standing still and then he just goes, "Hasha!" You know, and you're like, if you're fucking, you'll throw hot coffee all over the person next to you, you know. And I go, Mike, you got to give a heads up when you're going to sneeze. You know, the hand up and the turn the back or lift the T-shirt over there. And he goes, I don't know when they're coming. And I said, that's very much like, that's indicative of your entire life, isn't it? You just don't know when things are going
to
happen.
Do women, though, as a rule, I know this is a hard line to draw, but do women not like sneezing? Because they seem to, as a general rule, not very many women sneeze in that manner.
No. They're, it's not socially acceptable. They're not doing the hey, everyone
so
look
satisfying.
At me. Sneeze. All right, now
I
we're
enjoy
getting
a sneeze, but I don't like it. Could be so uncontrolled.
You know,
who knows what's going to fly out?
August may be right because when we were walking through LAX the other night, and I said, I just said, hand off the lemon tart to the Husky Katie Lang, and he said, I don't know if I'm the Husky Katie Lang anymore. I may just be Katie Lang.
Someone's getting some self-esteem. Isn't that wonderful? Hey, you know,
he boasted to everyone near the Cinnabon.
Isn't that, though, I never really put two and two together. Constant craving is a perfect thing for Michael Huggins.
I've never recognized that.
Free and it's edible, possibly? Yes, then give it to me.
Oh, they – when I did my second Mangria signing in Vancouver, they made – mistake of setting up our table by the candy stand at the liquor store at the front checkout. Mike this whole time was just helping himself to Reese's. They lost money. I mean, they went through 23 cases, but they definitely lost on that event.
So silver rings guy.
Oh, on the way back, yes, silver rings guy. You know, 60-year-old dude, long hair, like can't let the ghost die, can't give it up, and lots of silver. And again, yeah, you got to go to your fucking kids' peewee basketball game dressed like Slash, and it all looks like shit at 8:30 in the morning, right? There's no bushy-tailed version of that rock look. It's all fucking – and you don't have enough ass and thigh to fill up the pants anymore, and you're wearing the shirt that's sleeveless, but you don't have the guns to rock anymore, and it's just sort of a mess. I understand the cardigan and the jumpsuit for the older folks.
And that was another infamous Mike August story. Back,
my mom sneezes exactly like August. And yeah. Has the exact same excuse. Doesn't know when it's coming. Can't control it.
Yeah. Mike is that way. He's just like, no, what are you going to do? He literally did
We'll make you drop things. You're holding, it's like a gunshot level of scare. Yeah. It's like, well, you can't do that to people.
Out of nowhere. But I wouldn't consider it JV, but it's close.
I don't know. It's some markets, it might be all balls.
Well, let's figure out what is JV and all balls. Because in 2013, DFG came in around Christmas time to do a Christmas holiday edition of JV or All Balls.
Yeah, live from the American Comedy Co. in San Diego with Lena Esko as well. This portion was without her. She hasn't joined them yet on stage. Adam Carolla Show, 12:30. Deaf Rat Guy, Allison Rose, and Brian Bishop, December 2013. All Balls JV, JV All Balls, Christmas edition. Check it out.
DFG, you have an All Balls or JV list there, like a Christmas edition?
It's a special Christmas edition.
Yeah, right.
This is the thing where all balls is good, right. JV bad. Like the, that thing where the kids were singing, JV.
Right, right. That's JV. All balls is good, JV is bad.
So I'm going to do a rapid beat round with you.
Okay.
And the other guy, can, if you want to chime in, whatever, it's all good, bro.
Right, okay.
Let's start off with Eggnog Mangria.
Eggnog Mangria? I got to say, that's all balls.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Mistletoe tattoo above the ass crack.
on a dude, or?
I didn't think, either. Dude.
Dude, too?
So then what if my boyfriend and I find ourselves under that guy's butt?
No. Get matching ones. Go to Cabo and get matching ones.
All right. I'm going to say that's all balls as well.
Hell yeah, that's correct. What about when those dads dress up as Santa Claus?
Who does?
Fathers.
Fathers?
Dads.
Dads, right.
When they get dressed up as Santa Claus and they want to surprise the family, but then they get stuck in the chimney and... 2 weeks later, they know by the smell.
Right. Oh, right. Yeah, I know. That was a great Gremlins, the movie, right, that happened. I think that was a documentary.
It was weird because it was a really funny movie up until that point.
Yeah, yeah, it was a weird scene. Yeah, that's JV. That's JV, dude.
Phoebe Cates.
Phoebe Cates is all balls.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
These are layups.
Yeah.
What about fake Christmas trees, bro?
Fake Christmas trees. All right. I don't like fake Christmas trees because I feel like, you know, you're first off, okay. I was looking at pictures this morning of
the rubber tree my grandmother used to decorate every year for Christmas. Nothing says Christmas like a rubber tree in the middle of North Hollywood. It was a potted plant inside of her house. It was a rubber tree. It's not even close to a Christmas tree.
Was it seasonal for Christmas, or was it a tree that happened to be there all year and she decorated?
It was a potted rubber tree that was there year-round, and they hung... This is, it's a little hard to see. That's my sister, and that's me crawling around on the ground, hoping that I'm snatched up.
Oh, that's not a Christmas tree.
No, I know. It's a rubber tree. I was hoping to just be snatched up by a friendly vulture and taken to a better family. Yes, Mike, if you look closely, you can see golden Christmas balls. One of them is in danger of taking the tree down, which is in front. That was one year. Oh, that was every year at my grandmother's house. And then the next year was back at my house was my mom cutting down the branch from a tree in our front yard and leaning it against the wall. Very one-dimensional.
Is that a step up or a step down? And on the one hand, it's smaller. On the other hand, it's real.
I'm going to go with lateral move to hell. It's like if you were standing in lava and you went, no, I'm just going to move, 9 inches to the right. That's basically what the branch leaning against the wall was. By the way, the more depressing than no tree, right? The branch cut down and put there. So
would you rather be in a prison cell with no window or a tiny one at the top?
Right. And everyone does this thing all the time where they go, oh, the Christmas tree. You got to get it. You got to schlep it home. And then the thing, 2 weeks later, all the pine needles fall off. And then, that's the point. It's trouble. That's what sets us apart from the terrorists, everybody. Yeah. We spend a bunch of fucking money doing a bunch of shit that makes no sense. That's why we're into pumpkin chunking, and that's why we're into fake titties, and that's why, that makes sense. But the point is we do shit that costs a lot of money, takes a lot of effort, and then goes away because we can. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole point.
Hell yeah.
It's supposed to be a hassle. It smells good. It's fun. We went to the YMCA. We bought a tree. We took the kids out the other night. They picked out the tree. We got the tree. Yes, it's expensive. Yes, it's a waste of time and money, and that's the way we like it. It shouldn't be, let's just go up to the attic and grab this thing and screw it together. Like, it's a, an antenna and put it on the roof. You fucking put it down there, and... But, as I've said now, the problem is, and I've been complaining about this for a long time, unfortunately, the great Jimmy Kimmel, you've met Jimmy before.
Yeah.
He likes the fake tree.
Why?
He cites the hassle and the whatever.
On paper, the checklist, the fake tree has a lot in its favor, but the ultimate is that the real tree is real, and it's festive, and it smells good, but there's a lot of things that are good about the
fake
tree.
It's got a nice smell.
But
I actually have the fake tree, and hearing all this
is making
me regret it. But
you're a Jew. You don't count. What I'm saying is, you could go out to dinner on Thanksgiving, and what's with the hassle with the roast and the oven and the turkey and the basting? It's all fucking out. Fine, eat my wife's pussy. Save me the trouble. Yes.
Hell yeah.
Please, do I have to hug my own kids? Why can't I go down to Home Depot and get a couple of Mexicans to hug out with my kids? Come on, I shouldn't have to do it. I have to bend down and hug them? Someone else should do this. Yes, we could farm everything out, but it's the it's called a labor of love. We've forgotten about that part. So, yes, I got the...
It's all bald. It's nice to have a living tree inside your home.
Yeah. No, this ain't living. This is dead.
Oh.
Yeah,
I mean, no.
That the rubber tree was alive,
bro. It's still alive, and I've kept trees to April by keeping the water in there.
Yeah,
and make sure you put some sugar or some shit in there.
Yeah, yeah. They say that. I never know if that's good science or not.
And then you take the needles and you like grind them up in the blender. You can make a pillow or something and send it to.
Yeah. right there. Like,
give it as a gift or whatever.
So we got the tree set up. My daughter already broke one of the decorative glass bulbs. I think back to Jimmy, who does go with the decorative tree. The notion of the super brittle, breakable glass orbs that you hang gingerly on the branches of the tree with the thin wire, the kind of wires that come in wrapping or rolling papers, yeah. You know, just like the nothing tungsten wire. Seems like something's going to break, right? We had a bulb break, and my wife, who left for the kids' Christmas show before me this morning, and then I showed up, did the thing where she said, a bulb is broken, there's glass everywhere. I put a towel down on top of it, and then she paused and she said, I didn't want Molly to step in it. That's our dog. And then I thought, fuck Molly, what about me? What if I step in shit, you know what I mean? What if the earner, you know what I mean? If Molly steps in, it's one more trip to the fucking vet. They know her like they know Norm at Cheers. So she, Molly comes in the vet, like, hey, Molly, hey. And then you hear the cash register going off. It's people chilling champagne.
But it was probably because animals can't talk, so she would never be able to say she was hurt.
Right, but every time, I don't know if you guys ever have this, but every other day I see another part of my dog has been shaved, and I'm like, oh, that's another $2,300. Like, I'm convinced the dog just goes to the vet. They go, get the wall shaver out, and they just shave a square in her and then hand her back. Oh, that'll be $2,800. And my wife goes, fine, here's a tip.
Bro, so you're like, is this a dog or Sinead O'Connor?
That's very timely, DFG. Exquisitely timely.
Yeah.
All right. So, do you have more all balls or JV?
What do you think about those dudes that like go fucking ape shit on their house with a fake Santa on the sled and shit on the roof?
Yeah, I think that's all balls. Yeah, I like that. Do you think it's JV?
What do you guys think? Hell yeah, it is JV.
Oh, it's
bro.
JV?
You can see that shit from space.
No, you can't. It's
yeah,
just,
bro.
You're just bringing some merriment to the. Now, I will admit that it is shaming for the other neighbors that aren't doing shit. Your house is, you know, lit up like Berlin after a bombing raid in 1944. And
speaking of timely,
Dresden. Yeah. Like Sinead O'Connor flying a B-17 over Dresden.
Who are some other bald dudes? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just... All I'm saying is it's a little shaming.
Don't you think it's the house version of my kid is an honor student?
Yeah, it's like, hey, everyone look at me. And it is a weird thing that all they're doing is burning kilowatts. And again, it's one of these things, you know, fuck you, terrorists. Look what we got. You know what I mean? Have fun digging a hole looking for your next cup of water. We're lighting up our roof with bullshit. You know what I mean? And by the way, it only comes on after we go to sleep. Then when we get up in the morning, it's off. We never really technically know if it's on or off. That's a little we care.
The giant inflatable on the roof, that's a fake version of a fake person.
Yes. I, by the way, do not... I wonder... You know, they do that thing. I never really thought about it, but, you know, you see the signs, like, in front of the seafood restaurants and the liquor stores and stuff, where they put the owl up there. And they're like, what's the plastic owl up there for? And it's like, it keeps the pigeons and it keeps the seagulls away. You know, they don't shit on the things because they see the owl there. But by the way, somewhere around month 28 of seeing the same owl that has not moved.
Yeah.
Even with the brain of a seagull, wouldn't you be like, I think we can shit there? Like, I would, if I was a seagull, I'd do some test shitting. Like, you know what? I'm going to go do a high-altitude test shit. Like, I'm not going to go land next to the fake owl, but I will try to shit on it from high altitude. And if it dips a little to the left, then we'll know it's a real owl.
Do you think that's what they do, or do you think there's one bird that's their designated test shitter? Like they're the dumb friends.
There has to be that one bird that, like the guy in the frat house that are like, Ronnie, come here. You'll do anything, dude, right? Like you're the guy who chugged the fifth of Everclear and punched a cop's horse. You know that guy? You, dude, go down and see if that's a real owl or not. And then if that's the way birds work, then they must be confused around Christmas time because they're like, there is a fat bearded dude that's on that roof next to the owl. I'm not getting near that place.
And he really gets around because I saw him all over the place.
I see him all over the place, yeah.
You'll never want to deal with seagull shit again in your life. Get a fake falcon with one of them leather helmets. They see that leather helmet, they're like, whoa, I'm getting out of here and shitting somewhere else.
Yeah.
They are birds of prey.
Yeah, yeah, the birds of prey. Yeah.
Because you pray that they won't like eat you or some shit.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why they're called birds of prey.
Yeah. Yeah, it is weird that they have to put those weird leather helmets on them.
Some of them have goggles.
Oh, really? Like old-time aviators?
Yeah, like Snoopy.
Why stop there? Give them a scarf and a bomber jacket as long as we got them out there.
And that was DFG live from the American Comedy Company in San Diego with some JV or All Balls. Now, what's funny about that show is Lena Esko, who wasn't in this particular segment, but she was in the show, was the guest. And she headed the Free the Nipple movement. And we were told for weeks that she's coming on and she's going to do the show topless as a way to showcase her stand, her political stand of freeing the nipple. And she came on with a shirt, and Adam was on stage and just going, and you could see Adam because he didn't realize that she wasn't going to do it till she got on stage. He was, when he brought her up, she came on with a top on, and it was very awkward because Adam went, so we were hearing that you were going to be topless and I don't want to be weird, but should I ask you to do it? Like, and she didn't do it, and it just was weird that Adam had to bring it up because he was told that, and just goes down into
it's one of those really uncomfortable, awkward moments where it's like, well, we didn't ask you to come be topless here. You were like going to do that because it's your activist, it's your thing, but then like people aren't allowed to get a boner. So what's going on? Why is this happening? And then, like putting Adam in that position is the perfect one because, you know, Adam means like, oh, I don't care either way. But then you build this as some topless ladies going to come on stage for activism. And then she's like, nah, I'm just going to do this in a shirt.
That's right.
Free the nipple just outside of comedy clubs.
Yeah, exactly. Either way.
And who cared, by the way? It's a podcast. As a podcast listener, I have no interest in nudity. The Mr. Skin stuff is hilarious because of his various terminology, and he's an awesome dude. He's super handsome, by the way. But other than that, I do not care.
All right. Well, we'll never know because of Lena. All right. No worries.
I freed my nipple.
All right. That'll do for
Poor Tommy John.
That'll do for Cruella Classics. We'll be back tomorrow for our Sunday episode, so make sure to subscribe to Cruella Classics, and you'll get that along with all the other Sunday episodes we do. Yeah, we do this twice a week. We'll see you there. My name is Chris Loxamana. That's Superfan Giovanni.
Mahalo, and get it on.
Thanks again for listening to Cruella Classics. We really appreciate you doing so. And want to remind you that it was brought to you by Geico. Because Geico, everybody, they just want to say thanks. Okay, everybody's been sharing these days. Everybody's been providing content, thoughts, connections. And now it's Geico's turn. So they want to say thank you by giving you a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. They call it the Geico Give Back. Gio knows what it's about.
It's legit.
It's so legit, and because Geico's committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. So visit geico.com/giveback for info and eligibility.